Well, good morning, good evening, everybody. Tonight's conference call is going to be very informal. I'm just going to make some comments about what's going on in the market. I'm not going to get too much into the econ or any of the kind of technical stuff. We're going to talk a lot about the market, maybe talk about the stocks. And I'd like to have the ability for you to ask as many questions as you can. So, you know, don't be shy. And when I'm done talking, you know, I'll answer anybody's questions. First of all, I want to say our hearts go out to the people living in the fire zones. We have several clients in those fire zones, and, of course, they had to pack up and go, and as far as we can tell, their houses are okay. But, you know, we feel bad for them at this point. So I'd like to give you a brief update what's going on. Today was another market down day. Just seems like it's relentless, that the market keeps going down every day, but it's really maybe for us not as bad as it seems. I know everybody who gets their October Fidelity statements saw declines in their statements, but you know, if you start looking at your statement every 5 minutes on Fidelity.com or really worry about month to month, we're going to miss the point of being you know, trying to help you with your long-term goals. But just essentially some brief updates. The 2018 market gains are essentially gone. From the peak on August 30, 2018, the NASDAQ is down 15%. From October 3rd, the Dow is down 8.8% when it peaked. And the S&P 500 from September 21st from the peak is down 10.13%. And even the, you know, boring staid bond market is down 2.79%. Now, we took a look at our entire global portfolio report, which means all the different account types, all the stocks and bonds that we have, including some of the crazy stocks that you may own individually that we have not picked, but you wanted them in your account. All of our accounts combined only down 1.2% for the year. Obviously, each account, each individual account will vary, but on a global basis, the company, if we take all of our assets under management, it's down only 1.2%. You know, I think that's pretty good. It kind of just goes into the flavor of how we manage money during difficult times. Today I looked at all the stock market sectors. Every sector is getting slammed. Sectors that you would think that would be stable and going up when the tech sector goes down, they got slammed, and bonds got slammed too. So there is no safe haven. A good correction, or the formal term of a correction, is usually at the 20% mark. We're way from that. You know, the NASDAQ, which is tech heavy, is pretty close to it, but, you know, we don't have a lot of tech stocks. We have a few, but they've held up relatively well, and I'll talk about those in a minute. Why has the market gone down? Well, essentially, it's interest rates. Participants, hedge funds, all the crazy people, they have a fear of interest rates going up. However, that might not fully explain it, because the 10-year U.S. Treasury has declined from a peak of 3.2% to 3.05%. So I don't know if that fully explains it. General Electric, when we sold the General Electric early in the spring, we noticed they were having credit problems. That was one of the reasons we sold it. But now the market is kind of freaking out because GE's credit might be downgraded to junk status. That's incredible for a 108-year-old company, but they just mismanaged it over the years, and even we got fooled to an extent that we thought that it'd be turned around. But we sold it at much, much higher prices. We sold it at around 15, 16 bucks, and now it's like around 8. I think some of the ongoing trade concerns between us and China are starting to affect the market. Things are starting to bite. China's a lot worse off than us during this trade spat, but it certainly causing some heartburn because as tariffs are introduced, that raises the prices of goods coming into the United States, and that could cause inflation. And, of course, maybe, you know, the Robert Mueller-Trump investigation is probably has a little to do with it, but probably not. But the honest truth is, who knows? But I suspect it is interest rates. And why do I expect that? It's because in 1987, when the stock market went down 20% in one day, the cause was interest rates. Interest rates during that year had risen spring through the fall of 1987, and all of a sudden the market went down on October 19, 1987. The dot-com bubble burst in year 2000. Why? Because interest rates rose again significantly. And the same happened with year 2000 that pricked the real estate bubble that caused the great financial crisis. So I think the market is having trouble digesting a higher interest rate. So far, it looks like the economy is able to do that, but I'm not so sure how long the economy will be able to sustain itself if the interest rates are high, too high. And I'll talk about that in a moment. Typically, what happens in these types of markets is the overvalued stocks get hit. The Facebook, the Amazon, the Netflix, and even the Apple. So if we just take a look at Apple, Apple peaked at $233 a share sometime this year. It's now at $176. Netflix peaked at $423. It's almost cut in half at $266. And Amazon maybe not has done as bad. It's peaked at $2,050 and it's at $1,495. But what happens is these high valuations, when things get a little tricky, the hedge funds, the people who panic, the people who jump into these stocks because they have no other reason to jump in it except they hear about it on the news or CNBC or their friends, they're the ones who panic and get out first. And they get hurt because they have high valuations. We don't buy stocks with high valuations, and that is one of the reasons we didn't go into these type of stocks, because I know that these just get murdered when things turn sour. People think that these are one-decision stocks, buy and hold, they go up forever, but when the market gets scared, they're the first ones to drop out. And again, you know, history tells us about this. In the 1970s, it was the Nifty 50, the 50 stocks that, you know, you were told to put in your safe deposit box forever and forget it, and they lost something like 45% of their value. Gold, when gold went to $2,000 a share, the GLD or IAU exchange traded fund, people were saying gold was going to $5,000. Bitcoin, they were saying was going to go to $20,000, and now there's a Bitcoin crisis as Bitcoin has dropped to $4,000. And then, of course, the dot-com bust in year 2000. So, you know, people blindly pile into these things, and then they do that when everyone else does, and they chase the herd. No wonder a lot of people are getting hurt. As I said, you know, critically over the last 2 years, I think everybody, at least in this room, has an Apple iPhone, and I think many of you do too, but Apple is still the Apple telephone company, as I would call it. 80% of their revenues are attributed to the iPhone, and 60% is from China. And so if Apple iPhones are slowing, no wonder the stock is dropping. But people didn't think about that when they were chasing it at $233 a share. Now it's ironic that they loved it at $233 but hate it at $178. And as far as Apple goes, I would be scared of these three companies in China called Xiaomi, Levano, and Huawei. These guys are making phones that do the same thing as Apple, but at one-third or to one-half of the price. And by the way, we like Xiaomi a lot. So when the market goes up, it's actually riskier than when the market goes down. Think about it. If the market goes up, that means that stock gets expensive. The P.E. Ratio goes higher. The valuation gets higher. There's more risk in the stock. actually, when the stock goes down and declines by 10, 20, 30%, it's actually less risky. And that's what we actually look forward to. Yeah, you know, we want appreciation every year, but we like it also when we can buy some of the stuff we like at a cheaper price. So we tend to increase the stock positions when the market is down, and we decrease it when it's up. And I've been talking about this since May and June, and we decrease the stock positions in May and June into the 50% range, down from the 65% range. I mean, one of our strategies is don't shoot for the moon and preserve capital. And I think we've done a really good job of that because we have a mix of stocks and bonds. Bonds, you're never going to get like a super, super duper return on it. That's not what they're meant for. Bonds are meant for preservation of capital and to cushion in any stock market downturn. And so we will always have a mix of stocks and bonds. We're never going to go 100% stocks. And as far as is this a plain vanilla correction or is the start of a bear market, at this point, I still don't know. I think it's a plain vanilla correction. But I have to say, if interest rates increase significantly and they hit the 3.5% marker on the 10-year, then I would say it's probably a bear market. But we're not there yet. If we go into a bear market, then we'll reduce the stocks to 40 to 50%. We'll bring it down, keep the cash and bonds, and then when the market declines, we'll use that money to buy stocks. However, we're not going to panic, and I'm not going to sell great stocks that I love that have a long-term super future. We're not traders. We don't day trade. We don't month trade. We don't yearly trade. We think of the long haul. Where you might think in terms of 5 minutes looking at your portfolio, we think of it in years. And we have some great stocks that have performed well over the years and will continue. So we're not going to sell those. And those are PayPal, CSX, and NSC. So PayPal, year-to-date, is still up 5.6%, even though that the tech wreck, you know, has taken it down, tech stocks 15.8. And CSX is a railroad, and so is NSC. If you think of it, they're never going to build another railroad in this country. You got to be kidding. There's no way. There's only one railroad that's going to be built, and the crazy governor is doing it in this state. The train to nowhere. However, the typical railroad that hauls freight, it's like a moat. You can't build another railroad. And those kind of stocks become super valuable over time because the most efficient way to ship goods is through railroads, not through airplane, not through trucks. So why sell a great stock that might take a temporary dip? And by the way, CSX and NSC haven't really got clobbered this year. But why sell a stock that takes a temporary dip when it's got great growth potential? And PayPal is really, they're just firing on all cylinders. It's such a great company. You know, PayPal could go down another 20, 30% from here. And people say to me, well, why don't you sell it and buy it when it's cheaper? Well, I have no way to know if it's going to go cheaper or not, or I have no way to know when the bottom is going to happen, and I might miss a great opportunity to own a great stock. So I haven't reduced in this last month or so any of the stock portions. We trimmed a little here and there, but those were not really important to any of the portfolio. So we're just riding it out for right now because we have a goal, and the goal is to get you to retirement or whatever goal you have told me. And it's like on a train. If you get on a train from Union Station and you go to Chicago, your goal is to get there. So you look at out the window and you're approaching this bridge that goes over the Grand Canyon. And it's like an old wooden bridge and it's rickety. And do you say, you know what, I'm going to jump out of this train because there's a rickety bridge? No, you stay on the train because your goal is to get to Chicago. And that's exactly what we're going to do. So our strategy is we're looking for bear market signals. If there is a true bear market, we'll reduce stocks by 10%. the market drops by 20 to 25% cumulative, we'll increase the stock portion. So what do I like? Well, I told you I like CSX, NFC, PayPal. Honestly, I don't think there's a stock in the portfolio I don't like. There are some Chinese stocks I like. Do I like Tencent? No. Why don't I like Tencent? Because the government put somebody on the board in Tencent, and they're telling the company that what video games they can sell to the public, and they've restricted the use to minors, and they're censoring them. So I don't like that. Do I like Alibaba? No, I don't like Alibaba. One reason is Jack Ma is kind of pulled the horns and elevated himself to executive chairman from president. He's no longer running the company. That's probably because the government thought he was too rich. The government is getting into Alibaba's thorns by telling them what they can and what they can't do. So I like two stocks. One is Zomi. All they do is make phones. They make phones like the Apple iPhone. They're big in China. They're bigger in India. It's just going to be a matter of time before they come to the United States. And Zomi, Levenu, and Huawei are eating Apple's lunch in China, big time. Apple's market share is declining in China, and that's Apple's biggest market. So to sum it up, this is kind of what our strategy is going to be, how we're reacting to the market, how we feel about the market. We're long-term investors, and I know you know some people who just came on board, new clients, their brokers say, oh, you know, you got to think of the long term. Well, you know, I look at their portfolio, and their long term was all tech stocks and 100% stocks. That's not us. We're thinking long term on our stocks, but we're using bonds to cushion the downside of the portfolios and to increase the diversification. And as we've demonstrated in the past, if there was a true financial panic crisis or something like 2008, we whittled down the stocks into the 30% range. So we're not afraid to take that. We're not of the mindset of pray and hold. We know how to actively manage the portfolios. So for right now, we're buying more bonds. When the opportunity to buy gold, when gold hits around 1,200, we'll buy more gold. We have 1% in gold already, and that is our strategy. So I would appreciate any questions that you may have, and I'll do my best to answer them.
The conference has been unmuted.
We have now unmuted Juan. Please feel free to ask your questions, have a discussion with Steve.
Steve Richards, can you hear me?
Oh. Steve, this is Saul.
Hey, Saul.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. What effect are the California fires having on various companies that may or may not be in the portfolio?
Yeah, I think the California fires severely affected Pacific Gas and Electric and Edison International, because in this state they passed a law that's saying that any company starts a fire or is presumed to start a fire and they can't prove it, they have to pay all the costs. So PG&E drew down all their lines of credit. They only have about $1 billion in insurance. And, state said they don't want to see them go into bankruptcy, but they have to pay for all the costs, they will. Now, Edison is on the hook for the 2017 fires in Santa Barbara County. And so they're affected. The other one that might be affected would be Sempra Energy, the people who deliver your gas. They could be affected. But other than that, probably not too many.
Steve, it would help if you repeat the question when somebody asks a question.
Okay, so the question Saul asked was, what companies in the portfolio or outside the portfolio might be affected by the fires?
Thank you.
Hi, Steve. It's Karen.
Hey, Karen, how are you?
I'm good. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I was wondering why Warren Buffett got big into J.P. Morgan last week.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Buffett picks some of the stocks, and then he has two lieutenants who pick the other stocks. He's trying to train people to take over when he dies. So I don't know if Buffett himself bought that. I imagine he bought J.P. Morgan for two reasons. One, it's a cheap stock because interest rates are going up. The bank stocks got murdered. And the other thing is he started a kind of a self-health insurance company, or they're going to, with J.P. Morgan, Amazon, and I can't remember the other company. So I think he viewed it as a cheap stock, and also that he's friends with these people. Buffett increased his position to Apple stock, but that wasn't Buffett himself. That was his lieutenant.
Hey, Steve, this is Kevin and Rochelle. Hi.
Hey, Kevin. How are you? Hi, Rochelle.
I'm doing well. Hey, what do you think about oil these days? Why is it so cheap?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure why oil is cheap. To me, it doesn't look like there's an oversupply of oil, but it could be signaling a up in global demand for oil. The other reason is oil market tightened up in anticipation of an Iran embargo and sanctions, and then Mr. Trump gave 8 or 9 countries exemptions from it. So, the projection of oil increased, and that's the best I can tell. I say oil will probably, who knows where oil is going to go, but I would say it might end up sometime next year in the $60 range. I don't think it's going to go back in the 30s, but, you know, who knows? It could possibly do so if Russia and Saudi Arabia really pump oil. Now, if the U.S. draws sanctions against Saudi Arabia, guess what? The price of oil is going to go through the roof because they'll put an oil embargo to the U.S. The Saudis have already talked about that. They sent a signal to Trump that if they really press this killing of Khashoggi, they're going to put an oil embargo to the U.S. only. So that means oil will be north of $100. But we would have to see if that'll happen. And, you know, there's plenty, if you remember, for us old-timers, you'll remember that happened in the 1970s, that there was an oil embargo by
the government. Oh,
yeah. Right? So I don't know where it's going to be. If the Saudis do an oil embargo, the other countries don't have enough spare capacity to pick it up. Venezuela's production is dropping quite a bit.
Dave, this is Gordon. I have a question. What effect does the recent election have on the market?
Gordon asked the question, what does the recent election have on the market? I would hope no effect, but it just depends, right? So if it's a gridlock situation like it was maybe under the Clinton administration or George Bush Jr., it might be okay. But the truth is the market isn't going to do well, I don't believe so, next year, regardless of the outcome of the election. Now, if Mr. Trump gets impeached, the market is not going to like that one, right? So the political situation is just too hard to tell.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Stephen.
Go ahead.
I'll follow up.
Okay. Steve, for about a little over a year, you've been saying that as interest rates go up, that's going to affect the market negatively. But historically, the interest rates have been around 4 or 5%, and for a long time, we've been near zero. So why is it now when rates are, you felt around 3.25%, 3.5%, that would adversely affect the market. Why would it have such a big impact when we're not even near the 4 or 5% historic rates?
Okay, so Paul Bisbano asked, if interest rates historically were 4 or 5%, we're now like around 3%. And I said that if interest rates get to 3.5, it'll affect the market. Why is the market being affected now? Well, several things. Global liquidity is tightening or drying up. So if you think about it, when the Federal Reserve Bank raises interest rates, that squeezes or lessens liquidity.
I missed like 25 minutes of it already. I mean, this is like whether I lost $100,000. That's how important this is.
So the global liquidity situation is tightening. So when in the U.S., if interest rates go up, that means that the global the U.S. liquidity is tightening. The Europeans are buying less bonds in the open market to prop up liquidity, so that's tightening. And Japan is tightening. So you have this global tightening of money around the world. Number two, China is in trouble economically, big trouble, and that's tightening global liquidity because there's currency controls in China. You can't get money out of China. So there's no money coming over their countries to fuel their credit because it's staying in China. We never knew the effect of the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing. The quantitative easing basically is where they printed a bunch of money to save the economic system in 2008. That's essentially what they did. But now they're withdrawing that liquidity, and nobody knew what the effects of when they printed the money. Now we don't know what the effects are when we withdraw it. And a couple of conference calls mentioned that the quantitative easing is being withdrawn, and we might be to feel the effects. And I believe that today. The other thing is there's a thing called the neutral rate of interest. In the old days, the neutral rate of interest was around 4 or 5%. But now, because there's so much money floating around in the world, the neutral rate of interest is probably around 3. And what the neutral rate of interest means is the proper interest rate where the economy can not grow or grow. In other words, it's neutral. The economy doesn't grow or grows. In other words, it's a neutral thing. And so we might be seeing a lower neutral rate than we thought. And so my magic number has been 3.5, but I'm trying to assess is it really 3.2? Because in February, if you recall, the market had a hiccup last February. It was down 10% in February, early March, when interest rates hit 3.2. And in August and September, when the market hiccups again, the market hit 3.2. So something's telling me that my magic mic number is not 3.5, but it's 3.2, and I'm trying to assess that.
Thank you, Steve.
Sure.
Steve, good evening. This is Edith.
Oh, hi, Edith.
How are you?
Good, and you?
We appreciate your time. I have a question regarding the price of gold. It has been rather flat going down for a number of months. What will the condition be necessitated to go up?
Well, generally, gold goes down when the dollar goes up and interest rates going up. So the dollar has been going up, so that's the reason gold has been going down. But I think in a severe financial panic, or if rates drop, gold will go up. And so we're starting to like gold, not at the price today, but if it gets around 1,200, I think it, you know, long term, it'll be good because one, it'll protect the portfolios against inflation. Inflation's running at 2.5%, and I suspect if Trump puts on a 25% tariff on all Chinese goods, inflation will really start to heat up even more. So that's one aspect. I think the dollar is probably about 5% from where it's peaking, and so once it peaks, gold will start to go up. So we might be a little early to the party, gold could drop to around 1190 or so, but I think I'm going to start buying it around 1200. All this kind of nonsense where Bitcoin was going to replace gold and gold was a relic, turns out that is to be a bunch of nonsense as well. And I was right about Bitcoin, that it was a disaster. The underlying technology that supports Bitcoin is awesome. And as if you went to my investor conference, you know when I made my presentation on cryptocurrencies and crypto technology and blockchain, the technology is great. Investing in Bitcoin is not. And everything I said at that conference is coming home to roost.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Steve?
Hi, Steve.
Nancy and Bob?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy. Feeling?
Hey, I have a quick question.
Yeah?
I was reading in the New York Times today how people won't be able to get mortgages because nobody's going to insure homes built in the urban wild interface. So I know you're an expert in forestry. Congratulations.
Can you
comment on the economic impact that might have on California, you know, in terms of...
I've heard that story before. I have a cabin up in Lake Arrowhead, and, you know, I've heard that story where they weren't write fire insurance. Farmers is writing fire insurance, but you have to do a couple things. You have to clear all the brush around your house 100 feet. No trees. Trees have to be limbed up to 12 feet, and all the fire hazards removed. And you have to agree that if they can get in there and protect your property with FOSS check, you have to allow them to do that. So there might be a temporary lull in writing fire insurance in urban interfaces like the Santa Monica Mountains or Lake Arrowhead. But there's a state fund that will underwrite fire insurance if insurance companies don't, just like the California Earthquake Authority.
Earthquake insurance, yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, today, the last couple of days, the L.A. Times talked about, well, you know, maybe if your house burns down, the state won't let you rebuild it if it's in a fire zone. Well, good luck on that. The politicians are never going to let that get passed. That just ain't going to happen. There's too many houses in those zones. But as a guy who works in natural resources as a volunteer, should they be building homes in fire zones? No. Should I have a house in Lake Arrowhead? Absolutely not. That's insane. And I tell everybody, because of climate change, it's only a matter of time before my house in Lake Arrowhead burns down. So if I had a half a brain, I'd sell it. But I only have a quarter brain, so I'm going to keep it.
Thank you.
Daniel.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
It's Daniel. I have a question for you. I realize you said that the interest rate increases are the primary reason for market decline. But there's some real instability in the Chinese economy right now, and the British economy has potential to decline into chaos. And so how would those two factors affect the markets here, because we're really part of a global economy?
Yeah, no, those are really good questions. There's no question that the Chinese economy is imploding and it has an effect on us. There's no doubt about that. And the Brexit worries could compound. I'm more concerned about Italy in their budget agreements with the EU more than Brexit. But I think those are factors. But, you know, I did a research study as part of my doctoral dissertation, and every single market decline since 1921 was caused by a rise in interest rates, every single one. So I could be wrong. It could be due to the Chinese thing or maybe global turmoil. The U.S. economy is strong. The global economy is weakening. So you either have to have two things happen. The global economy synchronizes back with the U.S. economy, or the U.S. economy has to desynchronize or synchronize back with the global economy. So it can't stay this way forever. But I really think that the market hiccup has to do with interest rates, and I can see it in what we call the blowout in credit spreads. And a blowout in credit spreads is the spreads between the U.S. Treasury, high-grade corporate bonds, and junk bonds, and they're widening. And so that tells me that credit conditions are tightening.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Any other questions?
Steve, it's Paul again.
Hey, Paul.
I was wondering, in California, they don't believe in clearing the brush and taking down dead trees, which should be maintenance, normal maintenance. What effect do you think that had on the fires being so spreading so fast and over a large area? Do you think if the proper maintenance would have been done that the fires could have been less damaging?
Well, I'm going to speak from a generic point of view because I'm a volunteer with the U.S. Forest Service, and I this is a recorded line, and I don't want to lose my volunteer job.
Okay.
Because, you know, in this environment, when you criticize certain things, you're fired. So I don't want to do that. But I'm going to just tell you from my point of view as having an undergraduate degree in forestry, and all my other degrees are in business or finance, but I can tell you what I had learned. So when I was an undergrad in forestry, we had to take a class called fire ecology. And fire ecology said that basically you have to manage the forest, because if you don't, they're going to overgrow. And fire is a natural part of any fire ecology. So if you burn the understory, which is the dead trees, the brush, and all that, when a major fire comes through, it won't be so devastating or catastrophic. So what happens is now, because forests have a lot of underbrush and dead trees, they act as fuel, and the fuel is hot, and then it starts to go up the trunk of the trees to the top of the crown, and the top of the trees, the fire jumps from tree to tree, and they create these unbelievable winds and firestorms. So in order to do that, to keep the forest healthy, we need to go log the forest. I don't mean clear cut and rape them, but log the forest and make them healthy again. Now, two problems affecting California forests. One is the bark beetle. So because of climate change, the bark beetle, you know, every year trees get hit by bark, but they don't get overwhelmed because the sap prevents them from overwhelming it. But if a tree, if we have climate change and there's not enough water because of drought, he can't make enough sap to push out the bark beetle. And so in the winter, the bark beetle gets killed by the cold, but if you have climate change, it's not cold enough to kill him. So that's why we have millions and millions of dead trees in the forest. It would be better to have less trees than a bunch of dead trees. And second is, if you have less trees, they'll soak up less water, and there'll be more water for the existing trees. So if I was the chief forester of the planet, I would do what I learned in school. But that's not how the real world has been working. Hopefully they'll wake up, somebody will wake up, and things will be different. I hope I diplomatically put that.
You did. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, as a government, you know, as a volunteer forest ranger, we're considered employees, except we don't get a check. And we are forbidden to talk about anything political as a employee. We just can't make those kind of comments.
Steve, I have another question. This is Edith.
Yeah, hi, Edith.
Do you think there will be any changes in tax policy now that the Democrats are in a majority in the House of Representatives?
Not a chance. It'd be too difficult. They'll have to wait till they win the Senate.
Okay. Thank you.
All I know is my taxes went up. They didn't go down.
So. Mine too.
Yeah. Okay, everyone. Thank you so much. If there are no other questions, I wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Stephen. Great call.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Bye. Thank you.